Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, September 13th, 2021. Coming up this hour.
New details on Democrats' plans for tax hikes on corporate profits and capital gains.
Plus, a pivotal senator signals a delay to President Biden's economic agenda.
And Ant Group gets hit by the regulatory crackdown in China.
It's back to school for a million New York City public school students amid vaccine rules. Plus, North Korea test fires a long-range missile. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshauer in sports. Season opening launches for the Jets and Giants. The Mets beat the Yankees, and Daniil Medvedev won the U.S. Open.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. futures are climbing on this Monday morning. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up about 20 points this morning. Dow futures up 150. NASDAQ futures up 62. The DAX in Germany is up 0.7%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 1.32%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.21%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1% or 68 cents at $70.40 a barrel, and COMEX gold is little changed at $17.92.40 an ounce. The euro 1.1790 against the dollar. John.
Karen, we'll have more on the markets in just a minute, but first we begin in Washington, where Democrats have firmed up a plan for tax hikes. They're not public yet, but sources tell us they include tax increases that are less than what President Biden requested. Bloomberg's Billy House reports that it's an attempt to appeal to moderates in the party.
They're proposing a corporate rate of 26.5%. That's less than what Joe Biden wanted at 28. House Democrats can only afford to lose 3 votes on anything, and there is a very solid group of House moderates who just don't want to see the rates probably as high as Biden has offered. This is clearly a move to try to soften some of those increases so that the House Democrats that are needed will go along.
Bloomberg's Billy House reports that House Democrats are also softening their stance on capital gains taxes. Sources say their plan puts the top rate on capital gains at 25% instead of an earlier proposal nearing 40%.
Well, meantime, Joe Manchin is casting doubt on the timeline to passing President Biden's economic agenda. The moderate senator from West Virginia still does not support the $3.5 trillion plan and suggests it's unrealistic for Majority Leader Chuck Schumer to pass the measure this month.
He will not have my vote on 3.5, and Chuck knows that, and we've talked about this. We've already put out $5.4 trillion, and we've tried to help Americans in every way we possibly can, and a lot of the help that we put out there is still there, and it's going to run clear until next year, 2022. What's the urgency? What's the urgency that we have?
Senator Joe Manchin tells CNN there's no way to get an agreement in just 2 weeks. He also does not think the House will meet a September 27th deadline to pass its part of the plan.
Let's turn from Washington now to the fight against the pandemic. Much of the world is hoping for a light at the end of the tunnel. But if that's what you're thinking, think again. That is the message in today's Big Take from Bloomberg News. Experts all across the field of medicine tell us the pandemic isn't likely to end until COVID-19 has touched nearly everyone. Michael Osterholm is director at the University of Minnesota Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy.
We just don't yet know how this is going to play out, with one exception. This virus will find you if you're not previously vaccinated and protected, or if you've not had natural infection or protected. This virus will find you.
Michael Osterholm at the University of Minnesota likens the pandemic to a wildfire, saying it wants to burn all the human wood it can. Bloomberg's Michelle Cortez spoke to many infectious disease experts, and most seem to agree.
This decline that's starting now is not going to be the end of the outbreak. They're expecting that we're going to have rising cases going throughout the fall and the winter in the Northern Hemisphere. We actually have a couple of countries that are more than 90% vaccinated, a handful that are over 80% vaccinated, and dozens that are more than 70% vaccinated, which you'll remember was the original goal, right, to get to herd immunity. And now we have, you know, dozens of countries that are falling into these ranges, and yet all of them are experiencing these surges in cases.
Experts tell Bloomberg's Michelle Cortez they expect more outbreaks to close schools and for hospitals to once again become overwhelmed. You can read more in today's Big Take on the Bloomberg Terminal and online at Bloomberg.com.
Turning from the pandemic now to corporate news, today's big story comes out of China, where the regulatory crackdown shows no signs of slowing. Now, Beijing reportedly looking to break up Alipay, the lending business of Ant Group. Let's get more from Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis in Hong Kong.
We knew the regulators wanted Ant to separate its lending businesses from the payments app, but the FT says they want to go a step further. The paper says Ant will need to split its Huobei and Jiebei lending businesses into an independent app. In addition, Ant will be forced to turn over user data for lending decisions to a new credit scoring joint venture. That JV will be partly state-owned. Tech stocks sold down in Hong Kong, suggesting this news had not yet been discounted. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Brian, thank you. Well, back here in the U.S., Friday's court ruling on Apple's App Store saw shares of the company fall 3%. But Apple's calling the ruling a win, and now Epic Games is appealing the decision. Let's get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. Epic's appeal follows a judge mostly siding with Apple on the majority of Epic's claims. And in the issue at the center of the lawsuit, she did not rule that Apple needs to restore Fortnite to its App Store or Epic's Apple developer account. The judge did, however, say Apple engaged in some anti-competitive conduct. And for now, the first time, all developers can include a button in their apps to let users pay for transactions online, circumventing Apple's fees. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Renita. And it's shaping up to be another big week for Apple. The company unveils its latest iPhones at an event tomorrow. In addition to the handsets, Apple's expected to announce new watches, laptops, and audio products.
And Carlyle Group considering a sale or IPO of Novolex Holdings. Bloomberg News has learned the private equity firm has been talking to banks about a strategic review of the South Carolina company. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Karen. 5:07 on Wall Street. And let's bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, sir. The classroom doors are swinging open for in-person learning for about 1 million New York City public school students during the coronavirus pandemic. The start of the school year today coincides with several other milestones in the city's pandemic recovery that hinge on vaccine mandates. Nearly all of the city's 300,000 employees will be required to be back in their workplaces as the city ends remote work. Most will either need to be vaccinated or undergo weekly COVID-19 testing. The city was also set to start enforcing workers and patrons to be vaccinated to go indoors at restaurants, museums, and entertainment venues. North Korea says it successfully test-fired newly developed long-range cruise missiles. The Korean Central News Agency says the cruise missiles, which had been under development for 2 years, successfully hit targets over the weekend more than 900 miles away. Jeffrey Lewis is an expert on North Korea and a professor at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies at Monterey.
A cruise missile is really like an unpiloted aircraft. It's really just a flying bomb with small wings and a jet engine. That's something that North Korea has been looking at for a long time. They've tested smaller cruise missiles in the past.
Professor Lewis says this is a technology that we knew North Korea had been pursuing. The North hailed its new weapons as a strategic weapon of great significance. Tropical Storm Nicholas is expected to strengthen as it heads for the Gulf Coast. Forecasters say coastal areas of Texas, Mexico, and Louisiana could see heavy rain and floods. Democratic allies of California Governor Gavin Newsom continue to express confidence in his chances of repelling a recall, but warned his supporters not to let up. Newsom campaigning in Los Angeles yesterday urged residents to vote no on what he called a Republican-backed effort to remove him.
We have to send a loud and powerful message, no on this recall.
A recent poll from the Public Policy Institute of California shows Newsom likely to survive. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It's now 5:10 on Wall Street, and it's time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Steshauer.
Good morning, John. Francisco Lindor is in the first of what will no doubt be many seasons with the Mets, just starting a 10-year contract. He has struggled throughout the year. Last night, ending a Subway Series at Citi Field, he picked a good time for his best game as a Met.
2-0 pitch. Lindor hammers one. It's deep to right. Gallo's back near the wall. He's at the fence. It is gone! Home run number 3 tonight. Francisco Lindor has put the Mets back on top.
Eighth inning, WCBS to call. The Mets the night after losing to the Yankees 8-7. Beat them 7-6. Giancarlo Stanton had tied the game with a 2-run homer in the seventh. Gleyber Torres also with a 2-run homer for the Yanks, who have now lost 12 of their last 15. If the season ended now, the Yankees would not be in the playoffs. Jets and Giants lost their openers. Jets at Carolina 19-14. Their new quarterback, Zach Wilson, beaten by the guy he replaced, Sam Darnold, who always faced a heavy pass rush as a Jet. And Darnold watched Wilson get sacked 6 times. Darnold had a TD run and a 57-yard TD pass to Robbie Anderson, who was his teammate on the Jets. Fans back at MetLife, they saw the Giants get beaten convincingly by Denver, 27-13, only that close to a meaningless Giants touchdown on the final play. Teddy Bridgewater carved up the Giants' defense, 28 of 36. Melvin Gordon put the game away with a 70-yard run. Rams last night beat the Bears easily. No calendar year Grand Slam for Novak Djokovic, beaten in straight sets in the U.S. Open final by Daniil Medvedev, who won his first career slam. John Steshauer, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, thanks, John. Risk on this morning ahead of the cash open on Wall Street. We have Dow futures right now 138 points higher. The S&P E-mini futures, they're up 19. And the NASDAQ futures, they are up right now 60 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Daybreak brought to you by New York Community Bank. Ask about their My Community Interest Checking with free New York Community Bank online and mobile banking. Earn more, get more. Visit them anytime at mynycb.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European shares and U.S. stock index futures are climbing ahead of critical U.S. inflation data this week. Crude oil is extending a rally to a 6-week high. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up about 19 points. Dow futures up 141 and NASDAQ futures up 60. The DAX in Germany is up 0.7%. The 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 1.32%. The yield on the 2-year 0.21%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.9% or 66 cents at $70.38 a barrel. COMEX gold is little changed on $1.20 at $17.90 an ounce. The euro 1.1788 against the dollar. British pound 1.3816. And the yen's at 110.13. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. North Korea said it successfully test-fired a new model of long-range cruise missiles this weekend. According to the official Korea Central News Agency, the missiles flew more than 2 hours for about 930 miles before hitting targets. House Democrats have drafted a package of tax increases that falls short of President Joe Biden's ambition. People familiar with the matter told Bloomberg the Democratic proposal would raise the top corporate tax rate from 21% to 26.5%, but that's less than the 28% Biden had sought. Week one in the NFL, the Jets and Giants lost. Along with the Patriots and Washington, the 49ers won. The Ravens play the Raiders tonight. In tennis at the men's U.S. Open, Novak Djokovic lost to Daniil Medvedev. In Major League Baseball, the Mets beat the Yankees 7-6. The Red Sox lost. The Nationals won. The Orioles lost to the Blue Jays 22-7. The Giants and A's won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It's coming up on 5:20 on Wall Street. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. The big data point of the week will be the Consumer Price Index. We should get an idea of how sticky inflation is. Let's get a look at that and set you up for the trading week now with Dennis Garbman, economist and chair of the University of Akron Endowment Committee. Dennis, always a pleasure. Happy Monday. How sticky are the price increases we've been experiencing?
I don't think they're transitory, as Mr. Powell would have us believe. I think they're really quite sticky. I think we're going to see inflation being very problematic and much higher over the course of the next several months, over the next several years. You cannot have the expansion of the monetary aggregates as aggressive as we have seen them in the course of the past 2 or 3 years and not have inflation at some point of an aggressive nature. So I think CPI is going to be disturbingly high this week. I hesitate to put a number on it. I think it'll be higher than the one we saw last month. And I think it is transitory at all. I think this is going to be a sticky problem that's going to be with us for quite some period of time, John, I'm afraid.
Did you just say money supply matters?
I did indeed say that money supply matters. I think that unless I want to throw out everything they taught me in school and everything I've learned in 45 years of being in the business, money supply does indeed matter. I'm not prepared to throw it all overboard yet.
Okay. M1, M2, M3. Okay.
I'd rather look at the monetary base, which the Fed has stopped reporting on a consistent basis. So we have to look at the Fed's assets, the balance sheet. And the balance sheet, the number of Treasury securities that the Fed continues to hold, has been moving from the lower left to the upper right at a rather aggressive pace for a long period of time. So rather than M1 and M2, I look at the adjusted monetary base and the Fed's assets, and they have been moving higher consistently, and that's going to be detrimental for inflation. Has to be. Otherwise, we have to throw everything I've learned over 45 years overboard and say it no longer works.
Now, can you use this week's inflation report to gauge the timing of tapering even a rate hike cycle by the Federal Reserve?
One would think, one would hope, one would surmise that that'll be correct. I've continued to believe that we will have an announcement of tapering probably in the November FOMC meeting, not in the September meeting. And I don't think they will actually begin the process of tapering, slowing down the amount of buying that they do, until after the turn of the year and until after Mr. Powell has probably been reinstated as the next Fed chairman again or his tenure in office. But I think that in the past, as they've said, we have to think about tightening. I think at least they'll think about tightening in the September meeting.
That tapering's got to clamp down on the rate of inflation, does it not?
One would think so over time, but The rate of inflation is a lagging indicator. It's a lagging circumstance. And the fact that we've had so many years of expansion of the monetary base, expansion of the monetary aggregates, it's going to be several years before any slowing of inflation. It's going to be at least 4 or 5 years into the future as far as I'm concerned. The next 3-4 years are going to be the results of the past 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years of expansionary of the monetary aggregates.
Well, what are the 5-year and the 10 years the forwards missing at this point?
I think they're missing the fact that that eventually this expansion of the monetary reserves or the expansion of the monetary aggregates has to be inflationary. I think that the market wants to believe otherwise, but eventually the reality of the expansion will have an impact upon inflation. So I think that over time. 135 on the 10-year, I think that's where we're at this morning, maybe 132. I've missed it by 1 or 2 or 3 basis points. But I think over two or three years from now, we're going to see the 10-year back at 3 and 4%. I remember when I first started in the business in the late 1970s and early 1980s, when the 10-year had a 17% funds rate coupon, and you couldn't give them away. But for me to believe that we can get to 3 or 4% in the next 2 or 3 years on the 10-year, seems to me to be an easy achievement. It's probably going to happen.
Hey, before I let you go with this segment, industrial metals rising. Aluminum, $3,000 a ton in London. Haven't seen that in 13 years. Is that the tip of the iceberg? About 30 seconds.
Well, I think given the fact that aluminum has turned higher, copper seems to be doing quite well. The base metals all seem to be going from the lower left to the upper right, and I think that tells us that the economy of the United States and the economy of the world is still moving strongly from the lower left to the upper right and will probably continue. Yeah, that's the one good thing that happens when you have an expansion of the monetary aggregate. So, yes, pay attention to what's going on in the base metals. They're moving to new highs. Pay attention to that fact.
And stay tuned for more from economist Dennis Garbin. Dennis is going to join us next hour, 6:15, to continue our markets discussion this morning. Ahead of the cash open on Wall Street, Dow futures They're up 157 points. S&P futures up 20. The NASDAQ futures up 61. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And the Bloomberg weather for today, partly to mostly sunny. Could see an isolated morning shower well north of the city. The high temperature today, 85. Tonight, cloudy. Maybe a shower or storm. Low 65 to 70 degrees.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Beginning on Capitol Hill, Democrats have firmed up plans for tax hikes. They're proposing both a rise in the corporate tax and capital gains rates. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the details.
A 26.5 corporate tax rate as well as a 25% for top capital gains. Both of those fall short of what President Joe Biden proposed. For example, he wanted 28% on the corporate side. Meanwhile, the showdown over the Senate reconciliation budget plan put forth by Senate Democrats in concert with infrastructure is hot. Senator Joe Manchin says he doesn't see the hurry. He wants discussion.
You got to see what kind of money that spends off and then basically match that up with the highest priorities and needs we have. That's all I've asked for.
Manchin says it doesn't look like there's any way to reach the September 27th deadline. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Ed. On the corporate front today, the big story is out of China. According to the Financial Times, Beijing is looking to break up Alipay, the lending business of Ant Group. Ant will reportedly need to split its two biggest lending businesses into an independent app. Bloomberg's Stephen Engel has more from Hong Kong.
Huawei and Jiebe is Ant's biggest revenue generator these days. Alipay used to be, but it's not. So it will definitely shake up the valuation of Ant if you're going to separate Alipay to the most profitable parts of the business, Huawei and Jiebe. We'll have to see how that plays out, though.
Bloomberg's Stephen Engel reports this latest news comes after Chinese regulators in December told Ant to reform its lending business and to go back to its roots as a payments service provider.
Well, back here in the U.S., John, Friday's court ruling on Apple's App Store saw shares of the company fall 3%, but Apple's calling the ruling a win. And now Epic Games is appealing the decision. Let's get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. Epic's appeal follows a judge mostly siding with Apple on the majority of the claims. And in the issue at the center of the lawsuit, she did not rule that Apple needs to restore Fortnite to its App Store or Epic's Apple developer account. The judge did, however, say Apple engaged in some anti-competitive conduct. And now, for the first time, all developers can include a button in their apps to let users pay for transactions online, circumventing Apple's fees. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Well, thanks, Renita. It is risk on of the markets today. Dow futures right now up 153 points. The S&P E-mini futures 20 points higher. And the NASDAQ futures are up 62. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Here's now 5:33 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much. It is a big day for all New York City public school students. For the first time since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, about a million students are expected to return to classes in person today. Mayor Bill de Blasio eliminated a virtual option for the nation's largest district. Meanwhile, nearly all of the city's 300,000 employees will be required to be back in their workplaces as the city ends remote work. Most will either need to be vaccinated or undergo weekly COVID-19 testing. The city was also set to start enforcing rules requiring workers and patrons to be vaccinated to go indoors at restaurants, museums, and entertainment venues. North Korea said it successfully test-fired a new model of long-range cruise missiles. According to the North Central Korea News Agency, the missiles covered about 930 miles before hitting targets. That range would be sufficient to strike most of Japan. Retired Marine Corps Colonel and former Marine fighter pilot Steve Ganyard.
The accuracy is unknown. A lot of these weapons will use GPS for mid-course guidance. We don't know whether how low it flies to the Earth. So there are lots of questions about the capabilities here. It could be something very rudimentary, sort of like the German World War II V2, or it could be something a little bit more sophisticated than that.
Ganyard spoke to ABC. Tropical storm Nicholas is expected to strengthen as it heads for the Gulf Coast. Forecasters at the National Hurricane Center in Miami say coastal areas of Texas, Mexico, and Louisiana could see heavy rain and floods. Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner.
Public Works will be positioning barricades throughout the city of Houston in low-lying spots. Don't go around the barricades. Don't drive through water.
Houston Mayor Turner. Nicholas is expected to produce storm total rainfall of up to 10 inches across portions of coastal Texas into southwest Louisiana through midweek. Israeli aircraft have struck targets in the Gaza Strip in response to a series of rocket launches out of the Hamas-ruled territory. Tensions increased after last week's escape from an Israeli prison by six Palestinian inmates. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. John.
Michael, thank you. It's now 5:36 on Wall Street, and that's time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stanshower.
Thanks, John. The last four seasons have seen the Giants go 18-46. Owner John Mara said he expects the losing to end this year, but in the opener, the Broncos, who've had four straight losing seasons themselves, dominated, won 27-13, and only that close due to a Giants touchdown on the final play. Denver had 420 yards of offense, 35 minutes of possession time. Saquon Barkley's return from his knee injury resulted only 26 yards on 10 carries. It was Joe Judge's first game as Giants coach with fans at MetLife.
This is an atmosphere that we've been waiting for some time. They were great today. We have to earn their cheers. They were very supportive. They were great. There's great energy in the stadium. We got to do something more as a team to make them want to go ahead and stay into the game longer than they can.
The fans were walking out with 6 minutes to go. The Jets lost their opener at Carolina 19-14. Sam Darnold, the winner in his Panthers debut, beat his old team, beat his replacement. Rookie Zach Wilson did throw two TD passes in his debut, but Wilson was sacked six times. In Jacksonville, where the Saints and Packers played due to the hurricane damage in New Orleans, the Saints stunningly won 38-3. Mets beat the Yankees 7-6 thanks to three home runs, five RBIs by Francisco Lindor. His eighth inning shot off Chad Green broke a tie. Earlier in Queens, the U.S. Open final saw Daniil Medvedev beat Novak Djokovic straight sets. All three were 6-4. Medvedev lost only one set in the tournament. Djokovic finishes the year 27-1 in Grand Slam matches. Still no winner of all four the same year since Rod Laver did it more than 50 years ago. John Stanshower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, thanks a lot, John. 5:37 on Wall Street. It's time now for the Tri-State Business Report. And for that, we're joined by Bloomberg's Ed Khoury.
The AirTrain project to LaGuardia will be the world's most costly transit project per daily rider. That's according to the watchdog group Reinvent Albany. It says the project will cost at least $2 billion. The head of the Port Authority calls that claim ridiculous. Food delivery drivers are plagued by low pay and lack of basic protections, according to a report. After expenses, the median hourly wage for delivery workers in New York City is $7.94, excluding tips, according to the Workers' Justice Project and Cornell University School of Industrial and Labor Relations. Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont has taken to social media to welcome businesses to the Constitution State, lauding its workforce and saying that its family-friendly policies allow more women to work. While he didn't explicitly call out Texas, Lamont's comments left little to the imagination. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Khoury.
Thanks, Ed. 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Karen Chase. And for W8AS, I'll be reporting on a new creditcard.com survey that finds you'll start your holiday shopping early this year.
I'm Caroline Hepcorn, Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio here in London. We're reporting on the booster jab plan expected from the government.
I'm Gina Cervetti. And for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that a German startup just locked in a record slice of funding to make cheese without the help of cows.
I'm Ann Cates, and on KMOX in St. Louis, I'll be reporting on turbulence in the airline industry.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Well, coming up today, we get earnings from tech giant Oracle. Let's get a look ahead from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Oracle is expected to report fiscal first quarter earnings that reflect the company's seasonally weakest quarter. According to analysts surveyed by Bloomberg, the database software maker is poised to earn 97 cents a share on revenue of $9.77 billion. Bloomberg intelligence analysts say Oracle's first quarter results could show constant currency sales growth of about 4 to 5%, driven by an acceleration in cloud demand and improving on-premise spending. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Charlie. Now some of the other stories we're watching for you this morning. The price of aluminum has hit $3,000 a ton in London for the first time in 13 years. It's risen more than 15% in the last 3 weeks as demand for aluminum keeps rising. Meanwhile, Chinese output is down. And Aku, a big bauxite producer, Guinea, has raised concerns over the supply of raw material that are used to make the metal. And ahead of the cash open on Wall Street, Dow futures right now up 162 points. S&P futures, they're up 20 points. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And the Bloomberg weather for today, partly to mostly sunny. Could see an isolated morning shower north of the city. The high temperature in the mid-80s. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Maybe a shower, low 65 to 70.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European shares and U.S. stock index futures are on the rise this morning ahead of critical U.S. inflation data this week. Oil, meanwhile, is climbing above $70 a barrel in New York. This is after 3 weeks of gains. This is investors track the slow restoration of supplies in the Gulf of Mexico and the outlook for demand and inventories over the fourth quarter. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Let's check NYMEX crude oil up 1.3% right now or 91 cents at $70.63 a barrel. S&P futures are up 20 points. Dow futures up 167. NASDAQ futures up 61. The DAX in Germany is up 0.7%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 1.33%. And the yield on the 2-year 0.21%. COMEX gold is little changed at $1.10 at $17.90 an ounce. And the euro 1.1790 against the dollar, British pound 1.3819, and the yen 110.11. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. North Korea said it successfully test-fired a new model of long-range cruise missiles over the weekend. Korea Central News Agency says it flew about 930 miles. That's long enough to strike most of Japan. House Democrats have drafted a package of tax increases that falls short of President Joe Biden's ambition. People familiar with the matter told Bloomberg the Democratic proposal would raise the top corporate tax rate from 21% to 26.5%, but that is less than the 28% Biden had sought. Week one in the NFL, the Jets and Giants lost along with the Patriots and Washington. The 49ers won. The Ravens play the Raiders tonight. Tennis at the men's U.S. Open final. Novak Djokovic lost to Daniel Medvedev. Major League Baseball, the Mets beat the Yankees 7-6. The Red Sox lost. The Nationals won. The Orioles lost to the Blue Jays 22-7. The Giants and A's won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg. Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It is 5:49 on Wall Street. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Good morning. I'm John Tucker. And let's turn to Washington now, where Democrats, as Michael just said, have firmed up plans for tax hikes, but the timeline to pass President Biden's economic agenda appears to be in doubt. Joining us now to make sense of it all, Bloomberg Washington correspondent Joe Matthew, live from the Bloomberg 99.1 studios. Happy Monday to you, Joe.
And to you. Making sense might be pushing it, but we're going to try.
Let's try. Well, what's the proposal? How far away is it from what Joe Biden wants?
Great question. We're looking at the big headline you've been hearing, 26.5%, 26.5, the corporate tax rate, which is currently at 21. Remember, the Trump administration pulled it quite a bit lower several years ago. The president, Biden, wanted 28%. So it's not the 25 that had been hashed around that appears to be the sweet spot for a lot of lawmakers on Capitol Hill, but it is also not the 28% that Joe Biden wanted. There's more here, though. Capital gains. The capital gain tax would go to 25% from 20. That is a far cry from what Joe Biden wanted. He saw something closer to 40%, a doubling of the capital gains rate. That's not going to happen in this plan, at least. And then the top tax rate on Americans, you know, the wealthy, where President Biden draws the line above $400,000. It's $435,000. Making more than that, you get hit with 39.6%. It's currently at 37. Now, there's a lot of other areas in here. There are a lot of numbers that we're looking at that attempt to make up for some of these falling short from the original Biden proposal. One of them in particular, a surtax on people making over $5 million a year. 3%, it would raise $127 billion, and that wasn't even mentioned in Joe Biden's plan.
Yeah, there's a deadline of September 27th. Why that deadline? And obviously, it doesn't sound like they're going to make it.
Got a couple of deadlines. In fact, the next one is September 15th. Ooh, that's in 2 days. That's when the committees, like this one, the Ways and Means Committee, are supposed to have their work done, put everything into the bill, see what is actually in this thing, how much it costs, how much we raise. So that's 2 days from now. Then, as you point out, the 27th is kind of the self-imposed deadline that Nancy Pelosi agreed to when moderates in the House started to get upset about the bipartisan infrastructure plan that passed the Senate. Remember that so long ago? That was supposed to be the date in which reconciliation would be done, and Nancy Pelosi promised a vote on the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Look, things can happen quickly when there are self-imposed deadlines, so I will not sit here and say they're not going to make it, but it's a head-scratcher as to how they're going to get it all done.
How many votes can they lose?
Well, if we're talking about the House, it's a whole three votes. I mean, look, in terms of reconciliation, as you well know, they need to have every Democrat on board, period. And that's why we're spending so much time obsessing over what Joe Manchin is going to do, because on the Senate side, they need to keep that caucus together as well.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's talk about Manchin. West Virginia holds the key. And what does he want? What's he going to get?
Well, he wants a smaller price tag. He has said that repeatedly, and he's really doing a good job getting us to talk about him every Monday morning. This was the case last week as well when he wrote an op-ed and called for a pause. He hits cable news on Sunday, hits the Sunday morning shows, and here we are again on a Monday talking about Joe Manchin. It's doing a lot for his reputation. The question is, what will he say about this new tax plan? He has not had a chance to react to this. This came out following the conversations on Sunday morning, and it brings, by the way, spending on this bill to $2.9 trillion. That's how much money is raised by this tax plan.
Okay.
And Joe Manchin said he wanted something closer to $1.5 trillion, right? So maybe this loosens him up a little bit, knowing that it's not all deficit spending.
And is President Biden, in about 20 seconds, is he in a compromising kind of mood?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And he has said that repeatedly. You know, let's talk it out. We're going to get it done. He's dealing today. He's being on the road talking about climate change and infrastructure. He hasn't turned away from that, obviously. But whether he has some concerns about this tax plan, we'll see what the statement is this morning.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
Great to talk to you.
Bloomberg Washington correspondent Joe Matthew, live from our Bloomberg 99.1 studios in D.C. I'll catch more from Joe coming up today at 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Sound On when he speaks with Lester Munson, former staff director for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Karen.
John, thank you. And Bay State Business Time is 5:54, and it's time for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. And 5:54 is also Wall Street Time. It is brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Today, we're looking at the Justice Department's entry into the abortion controversy. The DOJ is suing Texas in an effort to block the country's strictest abortion law. The lawsuit set up a high-stakes legal matter after the Supreme Court decided not to block the Texas law in a controversial and closely divided decision. For more on the matter, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to constitutional law professor Leah Littman of the University of Michigan Law School.
Some legal experts are calling this lawsuit against Texas a Hail Mary pass, a delaying tactic. Do you agree?
I think based on the history and practice of the federal government suing states when they are engaged in unlawful conduct, particularly unlawful conduct that is inconsistent with the demands of the federal program, I don't think this is some completely outlandish tactic out of left field. I think it has a very strong basis in law that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to succeed, but I think it was right for the federal government to file it.
Do you see any procedural issues that Texas might raise? For example, standing.
Texas is absolutely going to raise a host of arguments about why the federal courts can't or shouldn't hear this case. You know, one thing they will argue is that the United States hasn't truly been injured and that the United States can't assert the rights of individual people who want to obtain abortion. And I guess what I would say is, yes, maybe it's not typically the case that the federal government is bringing lawsuits to enforce or vindicate people's rights. But it's also not typically the case that states deliberately engineer their laws to deprive people of their constitutional rights and make the law unchallengeable in court. So yes, this lawsuit is new in some respects, but it's new because the underlying Texas law that it's seeking to challenge is itself so unprecedented and novel. The second set of interests, however, the idea that this Texas law interferes with federal policies and programs, that's pretty well established that the United States can sue when state law is interfering or undermining some federal program or potentially interfering with federal officers or federal contractors.
We're assuming that this case will eventually reach the Supreme Court. How do you think the justices will align?
I mean, I think based on what they did in the abortion providers lawsuit, as well as their hostility to the abortion right, I think it wouldn't be unreasonable to expect that the Supreme Court will not allow the United States to get this injunction against the Texas law. But that's not because the United States isn't right on the law. It's because, again, this Texas law is so unique that there hasn't been a lawsuit under precisely these circumstances that the Supreme Court might feel compelled to follow. And in part because of that, their skepticism of the underlying constitutional right might lead them to not permit this lawsuit to go forward.
And that's Leah Littman of the University of Michigan Law School speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcast. Attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg Terminal at BLawGo. And futures this morning are in the rise. S&P futures up 21 points, Dow futures up 170, NASDAQ futures up 62, 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 1.33%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.21%. Still ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, a check on the business headlines and all the news you need to start your day. And this is Bloomberg.